And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to today's telephone conference of Allianz SE on the occasion of the Capital Markets Day. For your information, this conference will be recorded. At this point, I would like to hand over to Christian Groß. Welcome also from my side to the media day of the Allianz Capital Markets Day 2018. The contents which were presented this morning to the investors will be summed up over the course of the next half hour. The contents will be presented by Oliver Bäte, Ivan de la Sota, and Giulio Terzariol. And Ivan de la Sota will also speak in German. And it might be just the information for the German colleagues that he'll explain some parts in English because the working language is English. But after that, we'll then enter into your questions and answers. And with this, I would like to hand over to the CEO, Oliver Bäte. Thank you very much, Mr. Groß. Ladies and gentlemen of the press, welcome to our media call on Friday afternoon, and thank you very much for your kind attention. I would like to talk about the three or four most important topics which we discussed this morning in detail, and over the next 15 minutes, I would like to explain the most important drivers to you, and we'll start on page 3 of the documents you have. In 2015, we set ourselves four important goals for performance and health of the organization, as we call it. So we looked at the growth of earnings per share. Our goal at the time was to reach 5% growth. And just to remind you, the expectations of the market were that we would reach half of that, 2.5%. Then a return on equity of above 13.8%, and we, for the after 9 months, we've reached 13.8%, and we want to stay above this for the year. Then we also looked at the customer satisfaction, which we measure through the Net Promoter Score. That's the willingness to promote Allianz and its products in the individual markets, and we're measuring this both for health insurance and separately also for P&C, how the willingness to recommend us is in different markets. And based on the we started on the basis of the figures of 2015 with less than half of our businesses with a recommendation rate of on top, and so it's 47%, and now we've come up for this year with 71%. Our initial goal was 72 or 75%, so we're close to that. There are two or three markets which haven't reached this yet, smaller but yet important markets. And then also the mobilization of our close to 150,000 employees all over the world, and we'll do this through an annual survey. So we do this at least once a year, that we ask our employees all over the world about motivation and leadership. And this is being done with the help of our Inclusive Meritocracy Index, the IMEX. And through this, we get feedback from our employees all over the world. We started in 2015 at a value of 68%. Our goal was to reach 72%. We had a slight decline over the course of this year, driven above all by two major units, Germany and Allianz Partners. Many other markets have developed very positively, just as Allianz SE, the headquarters, where the employee satisfaction has grown by 1 point to 69. So it's important to understand that driving our financial KPIs was driven by the improvement of our core business in all business segments, both in P&C but also in life health and in asset management. We had ambitious targets for all our segments, and we've systematically followed up on them. And as you can see on page 3, you have the different components, the combined ratio in P&C, life health, the share of preferred lines, then the line of new business, and then also, for example, the investments in alternative assets were planned on 110 billion and have come to 127 billion, and then also the risk interest rate sensitivity, which we wanted to reduce further. And along all these dimensions, we will either reach our goals or even go beyond them. That's why the management team is highly satisfied with all of this and is looking with optimism into the following years. But of course, there are areas where we still need to do a little bit more. And page 4 shows you an important connection that leads us back to the one passion that we share in on the board of management, that business success is a function of customer loyalty. And you can see the figures here, 2016, 17, and 18. So we started with 55% customer loyalty, so that is businesses with NPS above market average. Then we came up to 60, and now we're at 71, and hopefully at 72% at the end of the year. This is what we've done, and we combined this with improving our profitability, and the investments into IT of 3.5 billion euros per year is now translated into productivity gains. And what's also important, satisfied customers and a higher productivity, all of that translates into higher growth. And these three elements are all in our target focus, which made sure that the Allianz over the past years has systematically increased its market capitalization and the shareholders' return above average compared to the rest of the industry. Now, the question is, how do we want to continue? Well, we want to continue down and build up on the foundations that we've created. We don't just want to follow any new trends. So the foundations that we've shaped over the past years, not just between 2015 and 18, but before that, this will be of the foundation for what we'll do in the next few years. And for this, we'll look at page 5. We had some challenges in 2015 when we had outflows at PIMCO, as you can see on page 6. When the colleagues have been able to turn this around and made 2017 the most successful year when it comes to net inflows in the history of PIMCO. Also, Allianz Global Investors has seen a great development. The colleagues had to deal with different heterogeneous asset management firms, and they brought them together when it comes to profitability, growth, and investment performance. So they've done a great job in this, and we're really very competitive in asset management. When it comes to life health, we sped up the change quite quickly, and we're beyond the targets that we had for our transformation. And over the coming years, the newer models, which are more capital efficient and offer larger upside for our customers, will prevail in our portfolio and will have much more influence on the topics of growth and capital formation. So also life health is set up in a way that it can grow in the future. And then our value core, our historic value core, property and casualty, we wanted to make this profitable and come down to a combined ratio of 94%. And we wanted to grow stronger than in the past. Part of the smaller growth outlook when in P&C was in 2015, that we had a good margin, but we were shrinking and we wanted to overcome that. And as you can see in our figures, we've set the foundations for that. But how will we continue, ladies and gentlemen? Well, on page 8, we try to sum up our concept, and we'll then give you some practical examples in a minute, which are to explain how we want to do this. So the main objectives of the past 3 years were to set the foundations so that our renewal agenda would bring us into a position where we could see that on the customer side, we're about to move to the market top, to the top of the market of the traditional providers, and the question is how we can close the gap to other industry areas where they have even higher customer satisfaction. Then how do we get digital technologies into our core processes? How can we drive ahead technical excellence, turn this into growth, and change our culture? And the question is now how we'll continue with this over the next 3 years. And for this, we have three headlines and goals that we aim at. First thing is that with a lot of work, we realized that the performance reserves of Allianz haven't been fully seized. So we want to address the topic of productivity. And that's not a question of cost-saving or cost-cutting programs, but it's about newly shaping our products and processes so that life becomes simpler for customers and employees, that we reduce the number of errors, and that we also make sure that we can create economies of scale in our business model. That affects the part transformation. Now that we set the basis on the technological side, we now want to reach scalability through what we call the Allianz customer model, which Mr. De La Sota will explain to you in a minute. And it's about using synergies by aligning product elements and by harmonizing and not centralizing. That's often misunderstood. No, we need a stronger harmonization, which will lead to more decentralization of responsibilities. And the last part, we want to get our capital allocation or improve our capital allocation by allocating more money to areas where higher growth is and higher profits are possible, and so that we make sure that we use our capital in areas we can build up our market share. That's the basic idea, and on the following pages, we'll have some examples in this regard. And I would like to explain one or two elements to you on page 9. So first of all, it's about the question of incentives and skills, the skill set in our organization. So right, 30% of our employees are on LinkedIn Learning, so we're the leading company in Germany by far in the mobilization of this learning platform. And more than 60% of the youth programs pay into the implementation of our renewal agenda. So many of our employees and executives have been brought into a new learning world, which is really to our benefit because it's our claim that we are the best in our industry and not just beat the market average or fulfill the annual plans we've set ourselves. The second topic then, we know from our customers that we've significantly improved, but there is still one element that is unsolved. So the understanding and the intuitive handling of our products and services. And part of this is that our employees get simple products which they enable them to easily service our customers. So these are two examples of products where we need to take steps ahead. And you've seen yourselves in the core market of Germany that over the course of the last year we had some IT problems in the IT transformation, and of course that mustn't happen again in the future. Page 10 sums all of this up. So it's about being simple, digital, and scalable. These are our business models of the future, and for this it's important that we have less, fewer, and intuitive products, and above all, that we don't have any negative surprises. So if we discuss something, it also needs to be delivered, and that also holds true for stability in our operations. Digital does not mean to replace people by robots, but to have a better data analytics space which we can make available to our employees so that they can have a more, even more targeted approach to service our customers with products and services. And that we have processes which are not being delayed by legacy IT systems. So over the next 3 years, we have to be able to replace the legacy systems that we still have on the modern platform so that we can also reduce complexity costs, which then also benefits the topic of IT security, by the way. So ladies and gentlemen, if we're then able to harmonize our products and processes with ACM, they will be more scalable. And Mr. De La Sota talked about this today, and also our colleague from Eastern Europe described very well how across countries we can. Petros Papanikolaou has done a great job in this and using it to reduce costs and see synergies. And that shows that Allianz doesn't just need to handle complexities in major markets, but also regions where we are present in many small countries, and that we can turn this into a benefit for our customers and our group. On page 11, then, you have the summary. So after we've been able to establish a global asset management system, overcome the crisis with Allianz Investment Management, we've built up a great platform which doesn't just manage wealth, but also taps new classes like alternative, and also with our global lines like credit and not just want to be present globally with them, but also with our retail business through simplified products, harmonized processes, and the global IT platform. Some figures towards the end, because sometimes it's difficult to understand what it means if we struggle in IT. We've tackled three topics over the past 3 years. First of all, we have the topic, we've established the topic of Allianz Global Network. In 1,825 Allianz sites, we introduced a unified global network. 1,528 sites, and that cannot be done without significant changes. In the framework of the data center migration, 21,000 servers were moved from hundreds of data centers into six, and we've step by step built up our private cloud. 82,000 so-called virtual workplaces were migrated in the framework of AVC to secure that we were not just able to work virtually, but that we also have safer data and can connect our six global data centers in a way that our data and the data of our customers will be safe and secure. In Europe, we're now working with 20 implementations of AVS in 8 different countries, and 75% of our revenues in Europe have already been transferred to the Allianz Business System. Just to give you an idea what we've done operatively over the past years, and that sometimes there are struggles in that is obvious. I mean, this must not be an excuse for instability on our interface towards the customers, and our employees mustn't suffer from that. But it might give you an impression of the massive transformation that we've already gone through and that we want to build up on. And with this, I would like to hand over to my colleague, Ivan Della Sota, who will guide you through the elements of the Allianz customer model. Thank you. Thank you, says Mr. Della Sota. Thank you. I'm now on page 13. It's about spreading simplicity in the group and to make simplicity scalable. Today we'll deal mainly with two projects which aim for that. That's the Allianz customer model. So we want to deeply transform the core business, the business that we have with the agents, the business where we have our main profits, and of course we also want to enter into new business models, future-oriented new business models and digital models that we want to build up and make scalable. And the Europe Direct platform is one of these examples. So Allianz will work more and more with models that can be replicated and used up by all the OEs, because with this we want to make sure that we are ready to produce perfect processes and services and make them available to everyone within Allianz. I'll now come to page 14. So we went through a little study in Germany in which we had that was in the framework of an online service, and we asked them which one thing bothers you most about insurance. And in this word cloud, you can see the terms and the size of the words described shows how often they were mentioned. So price, of course, that's no surprise as such, because we're in the price-sensitive segment. Then complexity, we were glad that it came up because that confirms our theory. But not a surprise, but a new insight nevertheless that we received was that rejected claims play a major role on this list. And of course, that makes sense. I mean, currently, we're rejecting too many claims, and it might be that these claims, from the technical point of view, have to be rejected because customers didn't show certain elements in the product or didn't pay for them. And so it's correct technically that we reject them, but nevertheless, tell that to a customer who hasn't had a claim for 10 years that who's paid his premiums on a regular basis, that one claim won't be covered. I mean, they will not remember which boxes they ticked in the initial application. And we need to change this because it's about customer perceptions. And that's knowledge that we need to transfer into the development of our new products in the future. Now, on page 15, you see the presentation of the Allianz customer model. We're in a world today in which our businesses are set up in completely different ways. They have different structures, different products with a different orientation, and we have by far too many products because the portfolios, the old ones, won't be transformed to the new portfolios, and it's difficult, you know, to get economies of scale and reusability from this difficult landscape that we have. So the new world is to look a little bit different, as you can see on the right-hand side. So we want the OEs to follow the same principles and the same business model. And when talking about business model, we're referring to the products, which should have the same structures, but we also talk about the same, about processes, about customer journeys, and about tools, and even about a common IT platform. In a world like this, the data structures will, of course, also be aligned, and that would then have huge advantages regarding the capacities to gain important information and insights through data analytics to then better serve our customers and have more efficient processes. Let me now turn to page 16, and this slide shows you what consequences complexity can have. That's an example from Spain, and in this example, you can see in Spain only 3% of the products are older than two generations, and these old products create almost 20% of IT costs, which clearly shows that the complexity and costs linked with old products. Now, of course, in many OEs, the number of 3% will be much higher. This can be 30, 40, or even 50%. And that is what we would like to change because it's a basic requirement to spread simplicity in our group. Of course, all of this, and this brings me to page 17, has effect on how we will design our products. In general, we want to demystify products because, I mean, products can be copied anyway, but it's not about products so much. It's about services. It's about really servicing the customer in a quick and an efficient way and about covering claims. So we want to simplify the design for the customer, but simple is not enough in today's online world, but they need to be intuitive. Otherwise, customers will just move away after a few seconds if the offer is not intuitive. And they have to be comprehensive. And with comprehensive, I mean that the basic coverages should be set up or have to be set up in a way that the majority of claims need to be covered. That is what we learned from our market research. Now, structure-wise, we want to present products as packages or modules, less some modules with pre-printed guarantees, and the basic package is to be comprehensive enough that the customer will have sufficient coverage and that no surprises come up and that any claims occurring will, of course, be paid. And in addition, we want the products to be mobile based on the lives of our new customers, their habits, and also for the agents. The agents are to be able to mobily through iPads and similar products to explain all the products and functionalities to the customers on site. So data-driven has to be a precondition. The data that we have and additional data that we get, additional insights and behavioral data need to be processed, and we need to then better adapt to the customer wishes. And finally, we also need to newly shape our processes in an innovative way. Then one logic, that is the basic idea of the master product, that we have just one logic. And with the master product, we mean exactly that, that all products will be shaped in when it comes to the structure, to the processes, to the screens, that we can work with this, with a sample product, and all the others, all other products will then be aligned to this, which leads to high degree of parameterizing products. And within a company, these samples can then be used to create additional products, and then we can move across OEs. And so the same structure will lead to the fact that in the end we will have global products that we can use across Allianz. I'll now turn to page 18, and in general you could say that all of this is a debate that doesn't lead to much, because at Allianz for 1.5 years we've realized that our products are already the same. And with Klaus Peter Röhle, the CEO of Germany, and myself, we had the opportunity, I mean, it was a nice challenge, we had the ability to lead the project harmonization, product harmonization within the group, and we started with a diagnosis, first of all. We've had experts do that, and what they found out was that in home motor and non-motor SME, these fields, the products to more than 90% in motor and non-motor SME, by far above 90%, are already the same. So we already have similar products, but we try to show all the differences, which leads to complex consequences for Allianz, because the implementation then could be much more simple if we had the same one. If we use them as the same, and we tried then to reflect this or implement this product taxonomy within Allianz, and products within Allianz are being built from the same building blocks. That is, goes through the Allianz product library, which has huge advantages, so that all the guarantees will be defined across the whole Allianz world, and that is the basic requirement for us to roll out or spread global products across all of Allianz. Now I'll move over to page 19, and here we'll be talking about the European Direct Platform of Allianz. That is an exciting project. It's about getting economies of scale through innovation, and we believe that this offers a huge opportunity for us. No one has so far been able to use the global opportunity. It's about bringing customers very close to taking out insurance online, but then they get back to the physical world and take out insurance there, so they're close to doing this online, and then they go into the real world. And we want to offer this, or want to improve this in the future. And on page 20, it's been shown that it's difficult to understand, because today we're digital. All of us are digital as customers. We do our banking online. We spend 3.5 hours on the phone. We're fully digital. We might not be digital when we go buying some bread, but other than that, I mean, when it comes to insurances, there's basically no reason why we shouldn't be digital. And this is what we really now want to get into. We want to simplify the processes and shape them in a way that we can seize this global opportunity. So we want to have a global and disruptive product. We'll start with 4 countries in the first wave, and then expand this to further waves. On the left-hand side of page 21, you can see the basic design principles, and it's important to go into detail on some of them. One brand, so we will seize one of our largest assets that we will build up on, so it will be an Allianz brand. It will be called Allianz Direct. And with this, we want to make sure that we get a direct pull effect, and that customers come directly to us in the online world and not through online intermediation. So we want to have one common platform, one master product, and one steering. These are all parts of the model, which are to make sure that we will have a high degree of flexibility and agility in scaling this project. Now, page 22, the ambitions. This is a midterm. These are our midterm ambitions. So if we get the right access to the customer, we'll no longer be talking about growth rates, but about factors, because then the business offers a huge potential. So as I've mentioned before, we want to be the best on the market. We want to really get targeted operating KPIs that we want to use for this ambitious ones. So they will be set up top down and will then all work towards reaching these KPIs. So here you can see that we want to, well, that we have a goal of less than 1%, for example, for rejected claims. So that's the new world of Allianz. The Allianz customer model, ACM, and the direct player are to define the new Allianz. So it's about making simplicity scalable, and we'll, building up on this, we want to transform our Allianz world, and we want to be disruptive in order to speed up our growth and our success, and not just to keep our margins, but maybe even improve them. So welcome also from my side, says Giulio Tessariol. We'll come to capital management, and we'll start on page 24. So it's about, the headline says, discipline generates optionality, and the strong operating performance of the group leads to a good capital situation and liquidity situation. And this can then be used for organic growth, of course. But as we all know, we generate more capital and liquidity than we can consume by internal growth. So that leads to two opportunities, external growth through M&A or buybacks. And the decision between the two options is free of emotion from my point of view. We'll just check which option offers a higher increase in value. That will then be the option we'll choose. But what's more important is that we have these options, that we have the flexibility, and optionality has a value, an intrinsic value. And with this, I would like to come to page 25, where we show you what we've done over the past years when it comes to portfolio management. As you can see, over the past 3 years, we've consistently taking smaller, medium acquisitions to expand our footprint. At the same time, we also worked on optimizing our portfolio. The amount of 1 billion of portfolio optimization might look small, but I can offer you a different perspective through selling the Korean company. Our solvency ratio went up significantly, and that translates into 3 billion of equity, which is how you can also interpret this, and that's quite a good result, I would say. We'll continue to work on portfolio optimization also for the future. We want to expand our footprint, and if we have the opportunity, we'll also try to sell underperforming segments or books. But as you can see on page 26, when it comes to capital management, they have a strong capital solvency ratio at 229%, so that shows the good capital base we have, a very good capital base we have, and that puts us into the right position for the future. So we are well prepared for difficult times, but you can never exclude the possibility that there will be difficult market conditions in the future, and that gives us sustainability and optionality in good times and flexibility. So if we look at the development of capitalization over the past 10 years, together with the cash, the 16 billion euros that the cash returns, that shapes a great image, I would say. And from my point of view, the figures speak for themselves, so I don't need to further comment on them. And with this, I would like to hand back to Mr. Bethe for his closing remarks. Yeah, thank you very much, dear colleagues. So I'll come back to page 28 and 29, where we show the different goals that we've set ourselves as a board of management and for the organization. We've summed this up, earnings growth, profitability, capital strength, but also the topic of the further improvement of customer centricity and the employee commitment. Nothing will change about these. The figures that we've set ourselves, what I would like to point out is that in difference to the past years where we had to do quite a bit with the turnaround of PIMCO and the transformation of a life health business, now we aim for more organic growth. So factually, a doubling of organic growth to 4% or more. And it's important to understand that beyond this, we have the opportunity through the usage of surplus equity, through anorganic growth, so that's say acquisitions in the form as we've done so far, or through further capital measures, we could increase the earnings per share to far beyond 5%. When it comes to profitability and capital strength, these topics have also quite ambitious targets. Now, one or the other of you might ask themselves, why are we not more aggressive? See a force in the balance sheet, and why don't we set ourselves even higher targets? Well, it's important that we've built up trust over the past years in the market, that Allianz delivers on its promises. And ladies and gentlemen, we're now moving in a world that gets more and more dangerous compared to the previous years. The stock markets fell quite a bit over the past months, have become much more volatile, and you can see this in the large technology stocks, above all Asia and China, the capital corrections there. Then the increasing number of natural catastrophes, not just in 2017, but also in 2018. And we don't want to promise anything that we cannot keep. So the other way around, even if the world gets more difficult, we want to promise elements that we can keep and not say, oh, something happened so we can't reach this. And that's the spirit we've had for the past 3 years and far before that. And we've always been well managed with this. But what we want to reach is what you can see on page 29. Over the past years, we asked ourselves why large conglomerates, large groups, discount on the capital market, and they did away with this through the improvement of profitability and through the improvement of capital management and building up on a strong balance sheet that we've all of us had formed over the years before that under Mr. Diekmann's lead through all the financial crisis. Now, through the strengthening of organic growth and the systematic improvement of productivity, scalability, and simplification of our product and process world, we now want to get a premium in the valuation of Allianz. That is our aim and our goal, and now we're looking forward to your questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press asterisk 1 on your telephone. Please also make sure that your mute key is deactivated so that your signal can reach our devices. For questions, please press asterisk 1. Now we have our first question from Michael Fleming from Börsen-Zeitung. Yes, hello. Here is Michael Fleming from Börsen-Zeitung. So further to the growth and investments, and I had another question on Allianz Direct. First of all, on growth, Mr. Bethe, you said that your transaction should get your more capital and that you have chances to expand your market shares. Which are the transactions and the business that is concerned? And I also would like to see an explicit growth target. It might be implied in the earnings per share, but I don't know whether this 4% plus organic growth also reflects the revenue growth. And the second question, I mean, a transformation costs money. Must be quite a lot of money because these advances don't seem to be expressed in the growth of the profit. Well, how much does it cost? That's my other question. And the third question on Allianz Direct. How are you going to design the prices? Will customers pay the same prices like in Allianz, or do you make a differentiation? So how do you would have a cost rate of 12%? What are the key drivers here? Right. My colleagues and me will then answer that alternately. With the first question, yes. First of all, yes, we want to gain market shares. That is revenue. We want to grow margin and revenues based on different countries. Nevertheless, our claim, not only to improve our margin, but also to grow. But, you know, that's different in the different segments. For example, asset management. We have reached a leading margin. Now, we are focused on revenue growth. It's not asset under management growth because there's this there's a lot of unprofitable, but there's a lot of profitable volume business. Mr. Tesserio mentioned that in his presentation, might add, a 5% growth that we want to achieve through various expansions of business. But also we have business where we'll focus on margin because we believe that the profitability is insufficient. That's why it doesn't make sense to have an average temperature of the building. So every executive that has a significant leadership of a unit has both a margin and a growth target. That means the old world of having negotiating a plan or saying like, okay, I'm going to give you the same like in this year, because the world is so difficult. That no longer exists. So the question of what is the right balance between margin versus growth can be then achieved in the individual case. Further to your question about cost, of course, we have two types. By the use of technology, and Allianz pays 3.6 billion to be precise, inclusive of asset management, where we need considerable productivity gains. Still, we're spending 40 to 50% more than most of our peers. And that's what we've done during the past few years. And now we have to take the benefit out of that. And our second topic is the topic of the expansion of the brand and strengthening our brand. We want to achieve that the mix of commissions and the way we attract customers in the internet is being shifted during the next few years. So we're going to marketing and customer loyalty and also to pay into the brand. And then so when it comes to pricing, Mr. Della Soto, yeah. In the pricing capacities, the entire know-how will be set up globally using our best specialists that we have in our countries in direct already. Now, we are going to be further updated and state-of-the-art when it comes to all the data, and we are going to assess all the data and in order to perform the best price calculations. And the commercial prices will then be calculated locally. When it comes to the different product designs and the price design with the local markets, first of all, in the first phase, we're going to have a different product as compared with the products that are being offered by the local Allianz entities. So in both companies, I mean each entity, is going to design their own prices. Now with regard to the cost ratio, how do we want to achieve 12%? Well, first of all, that is a top indication. That's a target today. Genialoid ranks below 14%. The other entities are higher, of course. But first of all, we want to grow. And all the processes will then be analyzed in order to obtain economies of scale. That is one of the reasons why we have started with four countries in order to achieve economies of scale and making use of them as soon as possible. Thank you so much. Next question, please. Further to remind you of pressing asterisk 1 to ask a question. Now we have a next question from Stefan Weyer from DPA FFX. Yes, hello. I also have three questions. One relates to the profits, the profit targets. So the EPS target of 5%, above 5% plus. Yeah. Is that including share buybacks, or have they been taken out? And in the operating result, the basis is 11.1, but Mr. Tesorio said that actually we could expect something higher than 11.1. That would be rather the upper part of the range. So how do you grasp that? That means if you have 11.5, that would be 4% in 2018, you know, anticipating that. What would that mean for the following years? And further to Allianz Direct, on chart 22, you set targets for the gross premiums, and there's a figure coming from 2017, and in the midterm, you're supposed to have 3.5 billion. What does it relate to if Allianz Direct does not exist yet in that form? Oh, yeah, and I have a fourth question. Sorry. Allianz Direct. That sounds as if you had set it up in parallel. So as regards the cost ratio and so because the colleagues did not want it in the countries doing that as centralized, so because you said, like, hey, this is where you have to go because otherwise your days will be counted. Could that be? Yeah, Julius Tesorio starts with the financial figures and then I sort of text the rest. So the further is about the earnings per share. The first question was the earnings per share. Let me start with the 11.1 and what you said in the investor meeting. So when we start from 11.1, you simply add the plus. It's 4% plus. Then this plus can be emphasized. If we expect a higher figure, because you said 11.5, I'd rather say 4%. I think that should give you sufficient information, but definitely it's going to be relevant in this plus if we start with 11.1. So you have to work with that plus a bit. And then your question relating to whether share buybacks played a role. If we focus on share buybacks, if we would do that completely, then the increase in the earnings per share would be more than 6%. But we also want to maintain that optionality. And obviously, if we go towards M&A in the short-term horizon, an M&A cannot arrange or achieve the same value creation or value increase than in the earnings per share than a buyback. So the long-term situation is different, but in the first few years, an M&A transaction can definitely beat a buyback. All right, thank you. So then also answering the direct questions, Mr. De La Sota, starting about the parallel setup. Our project has been designed that it starts from the customer's perspective. We do see an opportunity on the market because no one so far has been able to get this global opportunity from the online customers. We want to be the first. Now, in this online world, we need to be highly competitive. And, so the prices are highly competitive in the individual markets. You know that. In order to go along, we definitely have to reach a highly competitive cost ratio. It is our intention, and I find we were trying to communicate that both projects are quite balanced. So through the ACM, our traditional entities and the traditional models will also be strengthened through that. And by the implementation of ACM, we want to strengthen growth, and also growth needs to enhance productivity. And therefore, our entities will become more competitive towards other models and be stronger. So the offer that we put today in our entities through the agents is strong. It is advice-oriented. And we want to further strengthen that concept to make it even more compatible, more digital, and we're going to use a new franchise system for our agents and to give them the opportunity to be able to locally cover all the matters around insurances and to reinforce that team and to reinforce the situation and strengthening that situation. There was only the question left about the 3.5, midterm. 3.5 bit term. What does it relate to? Yeah, that's an indication that is not part of Allianz planning. That is a mid-term indication and a rough estimate that relates both to internal growth and also to the opportunity of, considering other opportunities. It's not a fixed planning. So the starting point, because sometimes, that's the question was on German. We have four companies, Genialloyd, iSecure, and iSecure in the Netherlands. So we still already have them today, and that's the basis on which we relate to make that clear. And that's why the growth relates to that starting position. Does that help your question? Yeah, of course, you just need to be able to classify that. Yeah, that wasn't that easy to understand in his remark. So on the other question, what do we provide for the traditional business? Quite interesting. We've been able to show there's no cannibalization between our agent channel and the direct offers. That's always assumed that we would cannibalize ourselves, and we looked at that really precisely and closely, and it's not true. In most countries, in most markets, we have market shares in the retail business that are hardly ever more than 15% or mostly are below 10%. That means 90% of the customers have not been attracted to us. That means the entire topic so that you take away customers from your own channels. That's far-fetched. It's not true. But on the other hand, we would like to take the opportunity without having to to start legacy on IT. And therefore, we would like to streamline our situation by using modern technology rather than being able to create it when you had to work with the entire past. And of course, this might help our existing entities to understand where am I going to, so once you get rid of your legacies. That's why it was a very good question. Thank you very much. And you said it's 18% cost ratio? Was that right? Well, if you don't look at the target, in Genialloyd we have a cost ratio of 14%. That's not too far away from where we're standing today anyway today. Now, in the setup phase, the transition to the Allianz brand has to be financed. That's highly important. That is a change expense that is related to the going concern. All right. Thank you. The next question, please. Thank you very much. Now we'll transfer to the English questions. Just a second, please.
Our first English question comes from Oliver Ralph of Financial Times. Please go ahead, sir. Your line is open.
Hello, I have two questions. The first is, why have you removed the top of your Solvency II target range? Is it to give yourselves more flexibility to make large acquisitions? The other question is about your intentions in China. What are you planning to do with the new holding company you set up earlier this week? Thank you.
Yeah, so this is Giulio. No, the reason why we removed the 220 is not to give us more flexibility, also because we are confirming the 13% ROE plus. The only reason why we removed the 220 is because of technical reasons. At the end of the day, the solvency ratio can go up just because credit spreads are narrowing. There is nothing changing the cash situation of the companies or the group. So from that point of view, yes, it's excess capital, but you cannot really utilize it. Also, you can have a change like is happening now in Germany in the calculation of the additional interest rate reserve. This has nothing to do with what is really happening, if you want, from a cash point of view in the short term. So all these kind of things can push the solvency ratio higher, and there is in reality no real cash impact. So from that point of view, we decided to remove an upper end of the range, which is, from a technical point of view, not really meaningful. So there is no hidden message about giving us more flexibility from an M&A point of view. And I'm Thank you also for the question, because I really want to clarify this, and I had also some conversation with some analysts after the meeting, and there is no hidden agenda in the removal of the 220 upper end range.
Yeah, thank you, Oliver. From Oliver to Oliver, yeah, just to reconfirm, there is no desire to have any dilutive large M&A. I think we said it in the meeting. And it's very important that what Giulio just said, that the ROE target anchors us massively. And this is not a normalized ROE or normalized here or normalized something. It's the number. It's the number and has been the number. So that forces us to be disciplined. That also, by the way, explains why we, in terms of the average growth rates, because you can factor in the maximum share buys, we could have picked another number for EPS growth. We want to make sure that we remain professional in terms of forecasting in a world that is getting more and more volatile, as we have said earlier. Now, to your second question in terms of China, you know, we don't want to be world champions in announcement, so we are carefully sort of building our presence over time. And it has been a big, big achievement for us because we've worked on it for 3 years. The idea is to now bring all of Allianz Capital capabilities into the Chinese universe. Remember, the total market share of foreign insurers in China today, 30 years after they supposedly opened the market, is 3% or less. If you subtract the market share of the local JV partner, is less than 1.5%. So factually, foreigners don't play any role. And now the leadership has decided to open. And we have held back for a long time because we said we just don't want to go into JVs where we produce a lot of revenues but not a lot of value for Allianz.
Oh, really?
Bringing Allianz capability means not just doing property casualty insurance, which we have put into, as you know, a joint venture with JD.com, which we're launching next year, in a digital way, you know, avoiding the mishaps of a traditional business model. And we are working on a few other options. Very important for us is to bring the specialty businesses like credit to scale. This is also the desire of the Chinese leadership. And for us to explore other joint ventures where we have a different negotiation power now, given that we have the holding. And last but certainly not least, to bring our strong asset management franchises into the country. And as you can imagine, PIMCO has not been ready, and correctly so, to go into a joint venture. The new holding license hopefully allows us quickly, and hopefully is only on the quickly, to bring PIMCO into China. So that opens massive opportunities. But let's talk about them when they have materialized and not just on an announcement.
Thank you.
Okay, next question, please.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Cynthia Xiong of Field Gibson Media. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having me. I got 3 questions. The first one, Mr. Oliver Bate, you mentioned this morning that you would spend, in the next few years, spend some time on reputational risk. What aspects of Allianz reputation are you concerned about, and how can you improve the situation? So that was question number one. Question number two, on the removal of the higher upper range of solvency ratio and lowering the target to 180% plus, how confident are you in terms of maintaining a strong solvency position? Question three, I understand that you are in the middle of implementing IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 accounting standards. Since you mentioned simplicity this morning as a main theme, is this compliance project part of your simplicity project? If so, how are you going to simplify the compliance project? Thank you very much.
Okay, maybe I start with a question. If I understood the last question, that was about IFRS 9 and 17.
Yes.
First of all, this is a requirement. So from that point of view, you know, we need clearly to do the implementation. Now, we are utilizing indeed the implementation of IFRS 9 and 17 also to look at the way we run our accounting, our strategy processes. So that's for us also a project where we can really look at how we do things And per se, this can lead also to a simplification of our finance processes and our interfaces between, you know, the different database, the actuarial database, and the calculation. So from that point of view, yes, we thought from the very beginning to use this as an opportunity for simplification. On the capital position, what is our level of confidence that we can keep a strong capital position? I would say our level of confidence is very high. And, you know, we have a tradition of very solid, strong risk management. And we are defining also the target level based on sensitivity. And we run shock scenarios based on what happened in the past, like the financial crisis. And then we also consider what could happen on natural catastrophe. So based on this scenario, we know that we have a level of capital that would be adequate even to go through a period of intense stress, both on the capital market and also from an underwriting point of view. So my response to you is we feel very, very good about the capital position, also very good about the resilience of the capital position in a crisis situation.
Now, let me, managing the reputation risk, what do we mean by that? The world is changing very much in terms of sensitivity of clients. Let's take two examples, data breaches. We need to make sure that we are holding up to the highest standards in terms of data security or minimum customer value that needs to be protected, very important in many countries, not just the West, but also the East. These are two examples of things that we need to do in order to protect the franchise. I hope that answers your question.
And what steps are you going to do to maintain this reputation and protect, for example, data breaches? Do you have any detailed plans? You mentioned...
Of course. We benchmark always, and there's various frameworks, really, whether we call the COBIT-5 framework, which is around data security. We have an internal concept that's called minimum value for clients that are super important to adhere to. So we want to make sure that the distribution of value creation between distributors, shareholders, and policyholders are meeting requirements that are defendable. But it's a very important subject matter that we need to really, really bear in mind. And what hasn't happened in the banking world is a stark reminder of thinking this through.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Next question. Operator, are there more questions in the line?
We have no further questions at this point. So thank you very much for your participation and your interest, Mr. Bitter. I'd like to say thanks to my colleagues in preparing for today's media call today. Well done. Thank you very much to everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your listening and your interest and your support. Have a nice weekend. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. This ends today's conference, and we thank you very much for your participation, and we wish you a lovely day. Thank you.